The court will proceed to the fourth case, Ruiz v. Continental Casualty. Mr. Ruff.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. This is an appeal from a denial, from a grant of summary judgment for the Sterling Inc. plan by the district court. Mr. Ruiz sought to obtain benefits, permanent disability benefits. He had received benefits for 2 years because he could not perform his job at Sterling Inc., and he was seeking now benefits on the basis that he could not perform any worthwhile employment. The first issue that we raised was that the decision was made by CNA, who was the insurer in this matter, and that CNA is not properly named as a fiduciary in the plan documents. The key, I think both parties agree, I have page 6 of my brief and at the appendix page 23. Two provisions in the summary plan description, which is very brief. First one says administration of the plan. Quote, the plan is administered by the plan administrator through an insurance contract purchased from Continental Casualty Company. Now, the insurance contract, which is made out not to the plan, but to Sterling Inc. and Sterling Inc. employees, not to the Sterling Inc. employees' plan, does say that CNA can make the determination as to the continued benefits after 2 years and can make it on a discretionary basis. But our position is that under the law of this circuit and under really some common sense, the plan, an insurance plan, is not a plan document. An insurance contract is not a plan document. Plan must be something separate, something that stays and exists. It might be funded from time to time by different insurance plans, but insurance plans can terminate. You can get a new insurance plan. You can get a new insurer, but the plan has to be separate from it, and the plan has to set out not only the fiduciaries and administrator, but, and I did not raise this, but I think it would be appropriate as I review this matter, the plan summary. The plan also has to contain all of the provisions for benefits, denial of benefits, and so on.
The summary plan. Mr. Ruiz received the document the district court calls a certificate of insurance, which was the document on page 2 of the short appendix.
Your Honor, I am not, it's something I should know, but I am not certain that he received. I do not know one way or another if he received that, and I apologize to the court. I simply do not know. My position would be, though, that even if he did, and even if the insurance plan was, the insurance plan contains the summary plan, insurance contract contains the summary plan description, but even if it did, that insurance contract is still not part of the plan, because an insurance contract can be changed. It can be changed unilaterally by the insurance company if, according to the terms of the contract, the plan has to be separate. The second provision in the summary plan descriptions, which talks about plan administrator, says, quote, Sterling Inc. and named subsidiaries, hereafter referred to as the administrator. The administrator and other plan fiduciaries have discretionary authority. It does not name CNA as a fiduciary, and our position is it had to name CNA as a fiduciary, and that wherever this court has in the past found insurance companies to be fiduciaries or plan administrators with the right to make a plan determination under a discretionary authority or even a de novo authority, they are named in the plan.
If they're not named in the plan, does this still come under ERISA?
No. Our position is that does not. I know that's an argument raised by the district court and raised by the defendants, but that position is essentially circular, because if someone can simply become a fiduciary by acting as a fiduciary, then anyone can take that position. Anyone can become a fiduciary.
But when I was reading your opening brief, you concede that Continental was a fiduciary that could make decisions when you say, and I'm quoting your language, CNA has discretion to interpret the language of and apply the insurance policy. You don't put any qualifiers on it. And then on the next page, you say, and I quote, under the language of the summary plan description, CNA at most can be a fiduciary.
Right.
Aren't you conceding? How should we read that?
Well, first of all, what CNA says under the insurance contract is it has a right to make that discretion, make that determination. We agree that's the language. But that is not a plan, and that doesn't make them a fiduciary because it's in their own language. I perhaps did not elegantly state, but what I was saying is that I didn't mean to say that made them a fiduciary. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that if the insurance contract was a plan document, then they would be a fiduciary. But the insurance plan is not.
All right. Thank you.
That, we believe, I would submit to the court. This determination is really a question, a mixed question of law and fact, but on a summary judgment, this court makes it de novo. And even though this is a summary judgment, I would concede it's a decision to be made by the district court or by this court on appeal because it's an interpretation of a contract. It's not one left for the jury.
So you're saying the plan administrator has nothing to do with this?
Plan administrator, as a matter of fact, had nothing to do with this.
So, well, but you can't, it's not under his jurisdiction even to acknowledge that the plan, that the insurance company is the fiduciary and the administrator of that. I guess what I'm looking at is you're separating this from ERISA.
Well, under ERISA, the summary plan description or some plan documents must set out who are the fiduciaries and who are the administrators. And I would agree that a fiduciary under ERISA can make this determination even though they're not the administrator. Our position is that CNA is not properly named in a plan document as a fiduciary or an administrator. It's in an insurance contract. An insurance contract is not part of the plan. And the further fact that it acted as a fiduciary is kind of a hoisting itself up by its own bootstrap should not be permissible as a matter of logic, because anybody, if they just act as a fiduciary, could be a plan, can be a fiduciary in ERISA. And that is not what ERISA, that is not what the statute says, not what the case law says. Our second argument, very briefly, is simply a question of fact under summary judgment and whether we raised sufficient facts for a reasonable juror to find that even under abuse of discretion, when CNA is the insurance company, and this court has said when the insurer makes the determination, this, of course, assumes the court does not accept my first argument, that the insurance company is a fiduciary that makes the determination. You have to have extra bite to make the determination because it has a financial interest at stake. In any event, we have undisputed evidence that four doctors said that Mr. Ruiz could not do work, any kind of work. This would be sufficient. The district court argued in various ways why each one of them was not sufficient, but that is really a decision that should be made by a jury under a summary judgment standard, and even if you have an abuse of discretion standard. Moreover, if the court denies my first argument and says that CNA is a fiduciary, then it has obligations as a fiduciary even under an abuse of discretion. And if the key issue is that Mr. Ruiz did not update his records or did not have doctors that had objective findings, when he asked CNA by his letter, what do I need to do, it had a duty as a fiduciary, assuming arguendo the court finds it's a fiduciary, to then inform him, we need objective findings, we need this or we need that. And our final point is that not only did these four doctors find he was could not perform any useful employment, they did it on CNA forms submitted to them. So that is a jury. We would submit that if the court finds CNA is a fiduciary, that whether they properly made this determination is a jury question. We've raised sufficient evidence for purposes of summary judgment to put it to a jury. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ruff. Mr. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court did properly grant summary judgment in favor of CNA in this case as ERISA fiduciary based upon the record evidence that was before the court at the time. This is clearly an ERISA benefits case. The employer provided the disability insurance benefit to its employees, of which Mr. Ruiz was one.
Do you know if Mr. Ruiz received the certificate of insurance?
I assume he did, but I don't know for a fact.
And that's not in the record?
The certificate's in the record, but but the issue of whether he received it is not a matter of the record.
Okay.
The certificate, the policy and certificate together do say that certificates will be issued and that the employer will provide them to the employees, and that is almost always the case. And we're not aware that that did not happen in this case. The trial court did correctly determine that the abuse of discretion standard of review was the proper standard in this case. The plan document, the plan itself provides discretionary authority. That's without question. I don't think anybody disagrees that the language confers the discretion. And appellant makes much of his position that CNA can't be a fiduciary in this case, but that's just not correct. And the district court found that CNA is a fiduciary and correctly did so. The test of a fiduciary under ERISA is a functional test. It's not by title, it's by function. And the fact that CNA is the only entity that makes claims decisions, that considers the evidence, makes it clear that they are acting in a fiduciary capacity. And we brief the issue. We bring to the court's attention the Supreme Court's case, recent decision in June of this year of Davila, Aetna Health Inc. versus Davila. And in that opinion, the Supreme Court plainly stated that someone occupying the position that CNA occupies in this case is a fiduciary for ERISA purposes. This is what they do. There's nobody else that could do it. So under the document, under this policy and this certificate together, there's nothing, you can't reach any conclusion other than the fact that CNA is a fiduciary.
Well, he seems to want to separate it out, and I don't know what that does as far as, I know in some cases, for instance, in medical cases where they try to separate the doctor in order to bring a malpractice suit, for example, to get him out from under ERISA, basically, and the preemption and all that. I don't know how that affects this situation here, but it would seem that, I hate to use the cliche, have your cake and eat it too, is either is or isn't ERISA, and it seems if you take it out from under, we're just looking at a plain old contract, and then I guess we'd have, then they'd have to make the determination or de novo review or something.
Then I think, if it's not an ERISA, it's under the common law or statutory law of the state, but this is clearly ERISA. I mean, I don't think the argument, unless I misunderstand counsel, I'm not so sure that the argument isn't that this is not an ERISA-governed plan. It clearly is an ERISA-governed plan because it's issued by the employer. It's a fund, a program, a plan.
Employer pays a premium, I think.
The employer paid 25% of the premium. That's more than sufficient and provides these benefits only to particular, only to eligible employees. It's the very definition of an ERISA fund or program. So I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think there can be any serious argument that this is not an ERISA.
Somebody has to administer it.
That's correct.
And you're saying it's the function, not a specific assignment or reference?
Yes, I think the courts have been clear about that. In the Davila case, as I said, decided this past June, the court pointed out what the particular definition of ERISA was under Section 1002.21(a)(3). And then here's what the majority said. This strongly suggests, and this being the language quoted defining fiduciary, this strongly suggests that the ultimate decision maker in a plan regarding an award of benefits must be a fiduciary and must be acting as a fiduciary when determining a participant's or beneficiary's claim. Skip a little bit. Classifying any entity with discretionary authority over benefits determinations as anything but a plan fiduciary would thus conflict with ERISA's statutory and regulatory scheme. You asked a moment ago, Your Honor, about these other cases where the HMOs get sued, and perhaps you're thinking of the Pegram versus Hedrich case, which was also decided by the Supreme Court. In that case, what happened was that what the court ultimately determined was that HMOs that are making mixed eligibility decisions, they're making medical judgments that are inextricable from the claims decision, aren't acting as fiduciaries. We certainly don't have that here. We're not making medical judgments. We're not prescribing care or saying what care you may not have. We're only interpreting the evidence that we get to make a decision about the person's ability to return to work, their functionality. And so I think there is a big difference. It certainly does not take us out of this realm of being ERISA fiduciaries. We think that the decision made by the district court was correct, that the administrator's determination was not unreasonable. The appellant had a history of back trouble, and he left work in February of 1999. As Mr. Ruff pointed out, Continental Casualty had paid him benefits for 2 years. Beyond that, then we see evidence from his treating physicians that he's able to return to work, and the most recent one of that was event was Dr. Hanlon's statement, and I think it's at record page 76A, that he should be able to return to performing duties in December of 2000. So CNA recognized that he wasn't going to go back to his old job, and they paid him benefits through that period of time. It was after that that they determined he was unable, or that he was able to return to some employment. And there's a conversation that the CNA, the vocational assessor, had with Mr. Ruiz, where Mr. Ruiz, in fact, agreed that these alternative jobs that CNA had come up with would be reasonable alternatives for him. Mr. Ruiz was seeking to get certified as a building inspector, and that process was ongoing. I don't know what happened with that. In any event, we believe that the trial court's decision granting summary judgment to Appley should be affirmed. It's not at all unusual for the district court in these ERISA cases, these benefit cases, to decide the case on summary judgment. There cannot be a jury trial, so the whole question of sending this thing back for a jury trial just seems to me to be an impossibility.
Let me ask you, one of your positions is that Dr. Kanuru's opinion isn't supported by objective evidence, but what about that August 13th letter from Kanuru stating that Ruiz had permanent implantation of a spinal cord stimulator? That's support for his view, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that's something that was done to help ameliorate Mr. Ruiz's condition. I don't know, Your Honor, that it speaks directly to his functionality. You may remember from the record that it wasn't but a few weeks after that spinal stimulator was implanted that Mr. Ruiz went to Puerto Rico for a month and flew on a jet 2,500 miles from his home and 2,500 miles back.
Right, and it is conceivable even during that flight that he could have sat during periods and stood during periods in terms of what his limitations were. And Kanuru's finding that he couldn't work full-time occurred after the trip with the knowledge that Ruiz had taken the trip, correct?
He had the knowledge that Ruiz had had taken the trip. But
is there any medical evidence in the record to contradict Kanuru's finding or that would show that Ruiz could work or could have worked in August of 2001?
There's no direct evidence, medical evidence, saying that he could return to work. Everything is vocational evidence and what the doctor said in terms of functional capacity. But if Your Honor is referring to page 91 of the record, I'm not familiar that this, it doesn't appear to me anyway, that this record says that he's unable to return to work, only that he had this stimulator implanted. Thank you for your time, unless you have any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Ruff.
This is an ERISA-governed matter. Our position is, though, that the determination was made by an improper person who is not a named, not a fiduciary or an administrator, and therefore that if to be determined at all, this case would that this case would have to be determined under state law of contracts with respect to third-party beneficiaries of the insurance contract, as well as an action against the administrator for...
Who should have made the determination? The plan administrator?
The administrator had to make the determination under the plan documents.
So he would go in and, I don't know what, just do what the...
He would have to set up a system of whatever they are. There's no other person that is named, properly named, to make it. And, Your Honor, this is exactly what I was arguing as why it was exactly what you mentioned with the HMOs, and which counsel stated when he cited the case, forget which one, when it had a two-part test. One, you must be a fiduciary, and two, you must be acting as a fiduciary. And that's what the HMO and other cases are. People are fiduciaries. These parties are fiduciaries or administrators per the plan documents. The question becomes whether in any given situation, because, for instance, they're treating, the doctors are treating, whether they are then in that instance fiduciaries or not. But it presupposes that they be a fiduciary per the plan documents, which is exactly the language that was quoted to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruff. Thank you, Mr. Brown. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to...